time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 656 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week we explore another great manga as we talk with Robbie J. Atkinson about her newest release, The Seventh Kingdom, the first volume of which will be available for pre-order soon. Robbie is a lifelong fan of manga, so she's perfect to create this engaging and exciting book. It's described this way. The Seventh Kingdom centers on a teenager on a quest driven by revenge following the decimation of her village. Throughout her journey, she battles powerful foes and collides with dark revelations as she learns about her mysterious family history. We discuss who the characters are, how this manga came to be, and what we can expect from her in the months ahead. The next pre-order will begin in mid-October, but until that starts, be sure to listen to this fun conversation and check out the preview at the link in the description of this episode. I'm sure you're going to enjoy what Robbie has to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. The Seventh Kingdom centers on a teenager on a quest driven by revenge following the decimation of her village. Throughout her journey, she battles powerful foes and collides with dark revelations as she learns about her mysterious family history. Offering young adults a fantastical journey of redemption, resilience, and transformation, this series is a poignant and empowering saga touching on the struggle with social and systemic despair. And I'm talking today with the creator and writer, Robbie J. Atkinson. How you doing, Robbie?
I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for having me.
It's good to talk with you. And of course, whenever I get to talk to a woman creator, it's like Christmas for me because I talk to guys all the time. So I'm always thrilled when I get a chance to talk with the fairer sex amongst us. So I'm very happy about that. So let's catch people up as to what the story is with the Seventh Kingdom. This is volume one is apparently what we're discussing at the moment. And of course, I'm terrible at beautiful words. Fukushu no Okuku. I'm just convinced I fractured that terribly. It's a manga. Is that Japanese?
Yes, it is. And it is. It's pronounced Fukushu no Okuku.
Okay, so much better than I could ever do it. So I should have let you do it instead of me fumbling around with it. So let's talk about the. I take it you're a manga fan.
Yes, I am.
Okay, how long have you been into manga? Because right now is a good time to be a manga creator because there's manga all over the good place. So how did you get into manga?
Honestly, it started from, I believe, childhood, I would honestly say. My generation grew up during the time when Cartoon Network had a show called Toonami or a segment called Toonami. That was where they aired Dragon Ball Z, Sailor Moon, a lot of Japanese anime that was based on manga. And then I think sitting up late at night, sometimes even sneaking out to watch Adult Swim, which oftentimes had shows like Inuyasha, Cowboy Bebop, things like that. And I remember that as far back as like third grade. So I think it runs, the passion runs that deeply for me.
So this has been a lifelong thing for you then?
Yes.
Wow. Boy, that's great because I have to admit, when it comes to manga, I am not nearly as up on it as I am with American comics. But, I have to say, when I go into stores now, I see whole sections devoted to manga. So I'm thinking you're on the right side of history at this point.
Thank you. Yes. It's I think that with our generation and the generations afterwards, it's become a lot more mainstream now. And so that's where you're seeing, because even now, I went to Walmart the other day and you see a whole if not a whole shelf itself dedicated to manga, Solo Leveling, Demon Slayer, One Piece, things like that. So, yes.
Good. Well, your timing couldn't be better as far as that goes, as far as I'm concerned. So that's a good thing. So when did you start actually creating manga?
So this is actually a fairly new endeavor for me. So I'm actually a filmmaker. My production company was founded in 2019, and we really did a lot of commercial videography, interviews, things like that. And then we pivoted into what I had originally wanted, which was shooting narrative-based films. So last year we did Kalimba, a psychological horror. And after I did that, I said, you know, in what ways can I follow the fun? In what ways can I get back to that simple joy and passion, that childlike joy and passion that I think everyone has in them, right? And as a business owner, as an entrepreneur, you have the privilege of being able to look back on everything you've done and say, okay, which of these brought me the most joy? Which of these is the most fun? And I thoroughly enjoyed the writing and the directing process, but I wanted to explore a new form of storytelling. And so really, as of this year, like January of this year, I had started collaborating with the independent manga studio named Tagline 9. And The Seven Kingdom, at least the first volume, is something I had written from about last year. And we did our character design around November of last year, November through December. And then we hit the ground running the start of this year. And we've just taken off running and not looked back.
Wow. Okay. So how long is the idea for Seventh Kingdom? How long has that been bouncing around in your creative area?
Honestly, this is a concept that has been around with me for a while. When my dad was alive, I used to call him whenever I would have interesting dreams that played out like a movie. And I remember him always encouraging me, like, okay, whenever you have a dream, you should write it down, because when you go back and analyze it, you'll find something deep in it, you know? And so from that, I remember having a dream about like a scene, and it actually played out like a cartoon. It played out like a cartoon. And so I said, okay, so I wrote that down. I had a dream or two. And then I think after I did Kalimba, I said, well, you know, I've been wanting to go this route. Maybe I should just try and flesh this out a little more. I took a segment of a dream and wrote it out into a script. and here we are.
Well, that's great, because the creative process is what it is. With everybody is different. And, you know, I have those kinds of dreams when I've eaten too late. You know, just before I go to bed, and all of a sudden I go to bed and I have these different kinds of dreams than I have normally. So you never know where the creative process is going to hit. And I think that's really cool how that goes. So, is it RPX Media Production? Is that the company that you run?
That's correct.
Okay. So I went to, there's an rpxmediaproduction.com. That was the link I got to be able to go in. And there's if you go there, you can actually see, there's what's called sneak a peek, and you can actually look at some of the pages from volume one, which is really interesting. I mean, it's very dynamic. Now, you're the creator and the writer. Who's the artist?
So the company Tagline 9 is comprised of a team, and to be honest, I've not met the entire team. Our collaboration up until this point has been entirely remote. So I was really in communication with an artist named Walla that I found via Instagram. And really, it was around the time my dad had passed. I had hired an assistant to help me keep everything moving while I was out about handling affairs. And I had my assistant look for artist, and they put together a spreadsheet, and Walla was on this sheet. So Walla and I ended up working together for a previous client for a more commercial based endeavor, and it actually ended up falling through. But I said to them, you know, when I get the chance, I do have an idea I'd like to run by you. And they said, well, let me know when you're ready. And so Walla and I have been working very closely through Discord, literally sending screenshots and downloading, circling, asking, pointing arrows, saying, can we change this? Can we make this brighter? Can we do this? Can we do that? And it's been entirely web-based. So Walla's been great. And then Walla also has me working with another co-founder whose his pen name is Alicia. And so Walla and Alicia, it's the three of us in this Discord server. And I more or less give feedback, ask questions, provide context so they have a better understanding of the characters. And that's how they help bring this world to life.
See, your experience is a much more common than it used to be one. Because I was an editor on an indie comic, and my roommate was the writer and the creator, and we live in Florida. And the artist lived on the top of a mountain in North Carolina. The colorist was in the Philippines. And we haven't all been in the same room together, because some of us, those of us in the States, have actually been in the same room once or twice. But the lady over in the Philippines, that's a harder task. And so we communicate with her, but her sense of color is amazing. It's just stunning to see the stuff. So the fact that you're doing this remotely is I think the way that most comics are made these days. You know, people used to talk about Stan Lee and the bullpen, where they were all in one big room and they all worked together and bounced off each other and got to talk with each other. But that's not the case anymore. I think what you're doing right now is the most common experience people who make comics and manga are going through. So you're on the right track, I have to say.
Thank you. Yes, honestly. And that's kind of the beauty of social media as well, is that there's so much raw talent to find. If you just simply love a certain subject, or for me, I just liked looking at illustration. I think aside from manga and anime, I remember when the Digital Arts Museum first opened, the very first one in the whole world opened up in Odaiba, Tokyo. And I remember going and seeing that. And I've been to museums like the Ginza Art Aquarium. They often feature work from independent artists that, I mean, they could have easily have found from Instagram. And it's just the talent pool out there is just amazing, deep, vast. And it's just a matter of being able to look in the right place, seeing the right suggested account. And the internet really connects people who are across the globe. And that's the beauty of it.
Well, your interests are more the connecting thing than your location. So that's often the good thing. Now, let's talk about the format of the book and stuff, because that might be something people try to invest or buy copies of it. Do you know how many issues or volumes of this book you're going to make?
Yes. Well, I have a rough idea, I should say. As it stands, my general idea is that the first season of The Seven Kingdom would be about 50 volumes, and I have about three seasons in mind. I actually started writing this already knowing what the final volume would be, knowing how it was going to end. And I'm really working my way up to that. And as we speak, I've actually written up to about the 18th volume so far. And in that sense, we're only in the third kingdom. We've still not reached the seventh kingdom yet. So it's going to be a full story, and not as long as, say, One Piece. For the manga and anime fans out there, they know that that's a series that's like 1,000 episodes long. it's not going to be that long, but it's a good story, a full story.
Well, 50 is pretty, you know, ambitious as far as comics and stuff like that goes. That's pretty amazing. Now, this is black and white, right? And it's done in manga style, so you read it from right to left, right?
Correct.
Yeah, DC's actually comics started putting out some manga. They did a Joker one and stuff like that. And of course, I'm used to American comics, so I'm used to left to right. And I had to re-educate myself into how to move the other direction. Because if you don't do it, if you lose track, you lose direction of where the story is going and stuff like that. I do have to say that the manga that they released is pretty creative stuff, pretty amazing to me. The Joker story, just real briefly, I'll talk about it. The Joker is trying to turn Batman into a copy of himself. So he pushes Batman into a vat of chemicals, which is, of course, how he became the Joker. But it reacts differently. Instead of him becoming a Joker character, he gets turned into a baby.
Interesting.
And the Joker decides he's got to raise the, because Joker needs a Batman to go against, he decides he's got to raise the baby so that the baby will grow up to be Batman in his opposite number. And I have to say, reading the Joker trying to be like a normal father, that was creepy to me. It still gets to me. I cannot see an American comic doing anything close to that. So I just find it interesting. And a lot of people I talk to about manga tell me that a lot of manga stories are that way. They are very unique when it comes to storytelling, and as opposed to like different from American comics, because they have a certain structure they've got to follow. Have you found that true? As far as have you had a chance to read many American comics?
Honestly, no. That would have been my dad's expertise. He was a huge comics fan, especially Marvel Universe and Spider-Man.
Interesting. Because American comics tend to be like American television. You start someplace, you go through a thing, but then you end up where you started, so somebody else can do a story the next time. And the bad news about that is you can't do the creative stuff like the Joker story that I've talked about. And it does resolve, by the way, in case anybody gets interested in that, it does resolve. It's three volumes, and it does wrap up in a very interesting way, I thought. But I'm always just fascinated, because manga to me is – I've always told people there's certain manga I read, but it was like a couple of decades ago. And so when I tell people about it, they have never heard of it. I'll challenge you and see if you've heard of these. This is likely before your time, but I'll just bounce it off you and see if you've ever heard of it. Have you ever heard of a book called My the Psychic Girl?
No, I've not.
Yes, this is before your time. This was like the late 80s, early 90s, I think I got started into it. And it's a very young girl who has psychic powers. And I really enjoyed that story, but every time I talk to manga people, they've never heard of it. Except one person I did talk to, they did know that book. So it's good. There was another story where a guy, an Asian, I think we used the hope, that's the right term, I hope is Asian gentleman, was running for president of the United States. And he goes to Texas, and to show how manly he is, he goes into a restaurant, like a steakhouse, and he eats not one but two whole steaks. And I remember talking to the friends of mine in the store I was buying at the time. Two whole steaks. I know people who could eat three or four whole steaks. That was really impressive, I guess, for the audience that was reading it at that time. But not at for American audiences, we all went kind of two steaks. Wow. That's not very impressive, but he was running for president, and there was another couple of ones, and Sci-Fi Channel, which it was called back in those days, on Saturday morning used to have what they called Sci-Fi Saturday, it wasn't called Sci-Fi Saturday, it was called, I forget, but it was like manga, some sort of a anime Saturday kind of a setup, and I used to record it so I could watch the shows, and there was one that you don't know it right away, but it was Superman's daughter is the main character. And you don't find it out, but slowly gets revealed, and you begin to realize that's who the main character is in this movie. So, unfortunately, I dropped out of it for about a decade or two, and so everybody that I talk with has no idea what I'm talking with about that. But that was kind of my exposure to it, and I liked it, but I do have to say the one thing that turned me off about it, there was a cartoon that had a guy that got turned into a bear, and he's working in a china shop. And nobody seen, people come in and buy stuff from him and all that stuff, and they don't realize he's a bear. And I'm kind of like, I don't think I can buy this premise. And so I ventured away from it at that point, because that was just a little out there for me. But there's a lot of interesting stuff. Like what you're doing is really fascinating too. I think it's the kind of thing that can call people back. Now, there was a preview of it, and I started to read it. There's what's called the Pretoria World Map, and there's a prologue. It says our main character, and if I mispronounce this, let me know. Clarabelle Keita?
Correct.
Is that right? Okay. Has made her way to the small village of, and here boy, I'm like, Kinesisek. Is that right?
Kinesisek, yes.
Okay. See, I should just let you do it because I'll get it. He's in search of a man named the Tea Master. She receives a tip about a local cafe and asks the bartender there if he can introduce her to him. The answer she gets is much more than she bargained for. So I like that. So where did the name come from? I mean, how did you name Clarabelle?
So Clarabelle, without giving away too much of the plot, her name is a combination of two other characters' names that appear later on in the series as she learns more about her family history and who she is. So that Clarabelle, it's a two halves of two different names. And Kada, I deliberately chose the name Kada because this is a series that has a great amount of like cultural references. And although there is a great reference to Japanese culture with like the Japanese secondary title, Fukushu no Okoku, and the binding reading right to left, there's also an element of certain characters having names that are closer to Japanese names. And Keita is actually a name that tends to be a Japanese male name, but in this case, it's actually her last name. In the same way that there are characters, like there's a character who appears named Dr. Takeshi Obara. So Keita, though, actually, aside from being a Japanese first name, is also an Ethiopian last name. That I found that out, and I thought that was a pretty cool dual use of the name. So that's where that name came from.
Okay, now why is she looking for the Tea Master, may I ask?
Yes. Well, she's looking for the Tea Master as a result of her village having been destroyed. And she received a tip from someone in her village that the Tea Master would be able to give her more answers because in the wake of all of this chaos, she has a lot of questions. And really, the first volume, as she talks to, when she meets the Tea Master and he asks her why she's here or how she came here, she tells him everything that happened leading up to that point. And she is made aware that he is a close colleague of her father. And so she goes to him looking for answers. This is really the beginning of her quest for answers.
Now, I don't want to give too much away, but in the first couple of pages, this guy says to her, "You're leaving out the best part." And she goes, "Am I?" And then it feels like something's off about this guy. He's hiding something. Well, yes, he is. He pulls up what looks like an AK-47 and starts shooting. And she goes, "A gun?" And it's a little more violent than I'm used to. Even in American comics, they'll punching and kicking, but they won't necessarily do a lot of gunplay. Is that, as far as manga goes, is that kind of a thing, something that often happens in manga, or are you doing something just to surprise the reader?
Well, this is a series that has a rating for older teens. And in a lot of the sci-fi genre, like when you think about Star Trek, they had like these little hand lasers that they used to shoot people with, right? I think in Star Wars, where everyone's used to like lightsabers, which was like a laser sword, so to speak, right? And so in lieu of the genre itself, with this being a sci-fi, he pulls out something, yes, that has that element of surprise for the audience, but also something that kind of, depending on how you look at it, it's also a weapon that, when you look at her surroundings and where she is and how she herself looks, how everyone looks, it doesn't look like they would have that kind of weaponry. And that's a nod to the level of advancement that she's going to constantly find herself at odds with. Because as she progresses throughout the series, she's going to encounter more and more technology that she realizes exists because she lived almost in a vacuum, so to speak. And the town that she starts off in is actually just more primitive than the other kingdoms. And there's a reason behind that. But yes, manga in general does have a reputation for being a little bit more violent, but that doesn't always deter the audience because, you can ask anyone who was a fan of Attack on Titan. That was giant titans, cannibalistic titans that bit people's heads off. And that was the best performing manga and anime in all of Japan's history. It outsold every, it created a new precedent that had never existed. So I would say probably in general, Japanese manga and anime is known to be a little more violent, but I would opt for a bit more violence and limited bloodshed rather than anything risque. And I was very deliberate about having a female character who is not wearing revealing clothing. She even has like black tights underneath her skirt, because I did not want in any way to follow that tendency and that trope within anime and manga to over-sexualize a female character. That's something I didn't want to do. So that was a trade-off.
Well, it's not only manga that does that, I have to say. American comics are famous for that kind of stuff. The thing I'm interested too is I always want to know how appearances came. Is Clarabelle, is she designed after somebody, and then the guy that attacks her, and then we actually get to see the Tea Master. It doesn't take long before he actually shows up, kind of a very interesting appearance to him. Are these characters based on real people? Are there the creations of the collaboration between you and the artist? Where did they come from?
So Clarabelle's design is one where I don't have an actual person that she was inspired from, more or less her outfit design, with her name being Ethiopian, her last name at least. Her dress is a modified version of the Ethiopian Wolaga Oromo attire. But in terms of how she looks, I really wanted a character whose look shows that she looks different from the other characters. She's got curly hair, which is something you don't see often. She's got darker skin. And when you progress throughout the series, you see her skin is darker than some people, but not quite as dark as others. And so that raises a question again about her family history and who is her family. You know, we have some ideas to who her father is, who is her mother. And so that's a question that gets raised. And it plays into a deeper theme and message within the series. But the bartender, I had no reference whatsoever for what he was going to look like. I just knew I wanted him to look maybe angry, buff, and bald. And I actually, when I wrote the script, I really wrote a very vague description, but I had a very clear image in my head, because to me, he's a minuscule character. He doesn't progress much further beyond this first volume. And funny enough, when Walla and the team illustrated him, they drew him exactly as I had imagined. So that was perfect. And the Tea Master, I wanted someone who had something of a, how do I describe this? Someone who had a bit of a sleek appearance, but you see his clothing is loose. You see he has this, almost this look of regality. He's very well poised, but behind that poise is also a kind of a calm. And I wanted someone with features that relay that poise and that calm. And then he's got these piercing blue eyes with a streak of gray. He was not inspired by anyone either, but his clothing was based on the traditional Chinese Hanfu, which in the First Kingdom, that is typical clothing, and much like Clarabelle's loose, soft kind of flowing clothing, because it's a less developed area, their clothing is more built for comfort and breathability. So that's a detail of the lore that really went into his design.
Because they often have to do a lot of physical labor if they're in a desolate area, so they have to have clothing that doesn't restrict their movements and stuff like that.
Yes.
So it's really interesting that the images are really fascinating about the and the conflict. Boy, I have to say there's one part where there's a big crash at one place, and I have to say that made me hurt when I looked at it. I said, "Ow." Boy, that is very, very a very strong display as to what's going on there. Because ow! All I can say is when they fight, it is painful. So, but of course, I like that. Too often in American comics and TV and stuff like that, you know, somebody gets hit and they hit the ground and they wake right up, bounce right back up again. But I don't think these people are going to bounce right back up very quickly on these, so it's really strongly done. Now, did you write knowing that this was going to be the initial, like a preview of sorts, that these pages?
Well, I wrote the full. So I wrote the full script. So fun fact: I actually wrote this, and I actually labeled them as episodes because in my head it's already an animated series because that's the end goal. But when I wrote the first volume, I actually was selective of what I chose as the preview because I wanted something that gave people a sense of shock, a sense of calm, an imagery of the environment where they are. You immediately understand that there's ulterior motives, or there you understand the motivation driving the main character, Clara Bell. You understand that there's something that makes her uneasy. I wanted people to see this quick action that really grabs your attention, which, by the way, this fight sequence was actually inspired by another anime called Samurai Champloo, which was a very revolutionary anime for the time that it came out because it was set in the Edo period of Japan, but it basically features like hip hop music. And it was the first anime that ever had like lo-fi hip hop, American hip hop music in it. Interestingly enough, I had someone look at the sneak peek and they said, oh, this kind of gave me like a feel of Samurai Champloo. So without any overt hint or similarity to it, people pick up on that tone, which was a great and rewarding comment to read. And then leave it on a cliffhanger where people want to know, okay, she's asked for the tea master. She got attacked when she asked for him. Now he's appeared. What happens next? And that's where you feel that the adventure really is beginning to unfold. And that is also meant to make you want to read the full volume even more because you want to see why she wants to speak to him so badly. And what is he like? Because a lot of people have looked at the Tea Master and immediately said he looks very menacing and they don't trust him, which I found amusing. But people have their conclusions already. And so that's really to play with the suspense and the mystery.
Well, the smart writers and the smart creators will know how we react to things, and we'll sit there and go, okay, now they're thinking this, let's go a different direction just to surprise the reader and stuff. And those are my favorite books, mm-hmm. When they play with our expectations. So I like that. Now, the thing that I look at, is this the first volume?
Yes,
it is. Okay, so let's see. So that means how many pages are in a volume? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Now, the sneak peek, there is a portion of the first volume.
Okay, because there's 13 pages on there. How much is that, how many pages are in the first volume then?
Ooh, that's tough to answer because we're still inking the rest of it. But
okay. But it's not 13 pages. It looks like there's like 20 when it's all said and done.
Correct.
But that's not what how many's in a volume, though. A volume is many more pages than that, right?
Right, much more. I do know that when we were talking initially about what it may take to complete the series, I know that Walla had told me it may take close to 100. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay, because that's interesting because there's one of the great things is we get to see, because as most manga is, that's black and white, except there is in the sneak peek edition, there's a cover and we see Clarabelle in color, which is nice to see. So we get a sense that when we get to the black and white pages, we know what our mind can fill in what the color is supposed to look like. So pretty cool. I like that. That's pretty smart. And there is the map page that I refer to, that is full color as well. So yes. There's some color and some black and white and stuff like that, which is very manga, according to any of that, because the Psychic Girl I read was all black and white. But after a while, long enough I read it, my brain filled in what I thought the colors were.
Yes.
So I never really, if you do it right, my brain will put everything together and say, okay, now this is the color. So it's really, it's lots of surprises, lots of action. Lots of movement, which is really great, and something I always think this is one of the reasons that manga is catching on so much is because it propels you from one page to the other much faster. Because I hate to say it, some American comics, some writers think that they get paid by the word, and I'll turn a page and this whole page will be covered with text. And I'm like, oh, boy. So I figure, well, they'll explain things to me as I go along. So I turn that page right away. I don't bother to read all that text. But this is even right off the bat, we are hitting the ground running. And I like that in a comic. So that's very appealing to me.
Thank you. That's a concept called page pull. As a filmmaker, I have to learn these new terminology. Because for me, I look at this like really advanced storyboarding, which is a portion of the film process. Most people don't know that. Before you film, you have to actually draw out the shot list so that the cinematographer knows what how the camera is supposed to be placed, how things are supposed to be framed, what it looks like. They have a reference. And so to learn, like you said, page pull, the concept that you want to make sure you make certain panels towards the end of the page as dynamic as possible so that the person, like you said, feels propelled forward. They want to turn the page to see what happens next. It is an art. It really is an art form in and of itself. And I had to learn a whole set of new vocabulary just to really describe like what I wanted. Like I had to learn about what an inset panel was. But indeed, it's very... I think that some manga can be wordy, some of the newer ones anyways. And my goal is to make sure that if there's going to be any moments where it's wordy, you have imagery to also complement the wordiness. So you understand that you won't be bored reading. Now, granted, I will not put a whole paragraph worth of words in one page. So rest assured, you'll never have that problem with the series.
Well, I was thinking about American comics. There's one particular writer who I swear thinks that the more words he throws in there, the better it is. But I find it a lot harder to read. I would much rather have it. The old adage is in filmmaking as well as television stuff like that. Show me, don't tell me.
Right.
Kind of content. And I think that's a big deal. And obviously you're doing the show me stuff. Like I said, it's kind of painful at times, but you know, the good news is I can't wait to see what's going to happen on the next page. So it's really well done. Even just this little sneak a peek thing is really very engrossing. So I like that. So how far are you guys along with the book right now and the volumes?
Well, Walla and Tagline 9, Walla and Alizia are currently, we're on the page right when Clarabelle is about to go into her backstory, the events that lead up to that. And that's almost at about the halfway point. So that's been progressing very nicely.
Oh, great. Boy. That's great, because so many times I run into comics creators and they get just so far and then all of a sudden they stop for months. And the bad news is comics fans and I think manga fans to a point as well, what have you done for me lately? And if too much time passes, we have very short attention spans. And if we don't see a book come out after a couple of months, we'll find something else to entertain us. So it's good to know that you're working so far ahead and that you're doing really well. Now, if people want to buy the book, what do they do?
Yes. So for the audience that is on TikTok, they can actually order just the book itself through our TikTok shop. And that is when they go to TikTok and they type in The Seventh Kingdom, The 7th Kingdom. They'll see that page. And when they click on the shop, they can order the individual book itself along with other merch if they see fit. But if they would like the big package that everyone has been after, that has custom designs with the three main characters on it, if they want like limited edition t-shirts and stickers and poster prints with unique designs on them that are also autographed by the artist, then they would have to go to rpxmediaproduction.com/T7K closed. And they would have to join the waitlist, scroll down to that the bottom of the webpage, put in their information, join the waitlist, and then they will receive a notification when the pre-order window opens on October 25th around 5 PM. When that window opens, they have 72 hours to purchase everything they want. And then the window closes again after the 72 hours are done. And then we're back to the pre-ordering just the book itself, the manga itself.
Now, when I look at the on the website, it says that the digital version is $9.99 for pre-order. And for paperback, it's $14.99.
Correct.
So that's pretty reasonable, I do have to say. So I was asking, how many pages does that include? Because That always helps people if they know how many pages they're getting for $14.99, stuff like that.
Yes, it's going to be at least 100 pages, probably more, because we've had to add in some panels for the sake of embellishment and so forth. So, yes.
Okay, that's very good. So that's definitely worth $14.99, I have to say. That 100 pages, that's pretty good. That's good stuff. Now, you're also on social media as far as that goes. Do you want to tell people if they want to follow, is this you on social media or is it the seventh, the Seventh Kingdom.
Ah, yes. So if people would like to follow the Seventh Kingdom on social media, on Instagram, they can type in the_7th, _th_kingdom, and they'll find our Instagram page. They can also find us on Facebook by typing in the Seventh Kingdom as well. And they'll see the page. They'll recognize it. You can't miss it because it's a picture of Clarabelle as the profile picture. We're also on Twitter, we're on X, formerly known as Twitter. And that too is also a the_7th_kingdom. And on YouTube, if we have anyone who's interested, we haven't posted anything extensive to YouTube, really just shorts. And as time progresses, we'll be doing more videos kind of to talk about the lore, to talk about various aspects. But they can type in the Seventh Kingdom as well to find us. So we are all over the place.
Great, great. That sounds great. Now, are there other projects that you're working on that people should know about?
Oh, yes, yes. Well, the Seventh Kingdom, I would like to throw out there. The Seventh Kingdom is one series. And actually, when you go to the RPX Media Production page.com and you put in /manga, that'll take you to a page where you see the Seventh Kingdom on display and we have an overview. When you scroll down, there's actually two other projects that have been listed. Now, these are projects that are still in the very, very early stages of development, hence why I've not said anything about it to anyone else. So you're the only one who probably knows this, because I doubt that people have scrolled down.
Okay.
But there are two more manga series that will eventually be on the way once I've completed the Seventh Kingdom, both of which are kind of in a bit of a, how do I say this? They're different characters, completely different storyline, but it's actually in the same universe, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's world building, as I like to call it. So that's great that you've got all that going on.
Thank you. Thank you.
You talked about filmmaking and stuff like that. If people want to catch up on your filmmaking, is there any productions that we could catch up on to see the kind of filmmaking you've been doing?
That's a good question. It's Kalimba. The film that I shot last year was actually the first of its kind, and it's still currently on the festival track. We've won about 8 or so awards in different countries like, India, London, France, Germany, Korea, Tokyo. We've won awards all over the place, and they're still coming in. So once that has been released, people will be able to check that out through the RPX Media Production page, .com/Kalimba. And if they're in Atlanta, if you have anyone who's listening from Atlanta and they keep tabs on that page, there will eventually be announcements of the live screening. So we'll have a red carpet event where the actors and so on will come out, be able to take pictures, be able to have a panel to talk about the experience, talk about everything. And that'll be a great experience as well. But really, this film is a proof of concept for a larger project that I had co-written with my late father. And so I have been in the process of refining that script as well. And once I've reached a point where I'm satisfied with that, then we will kick off the feature film production. And that is something that will eventually be theatrically released on a much larger scale.
Cool. Cool. That's great stuff. Now, if people want to follow your stuff as opposed to the Seventh Kingdom, do you have social media too? Or do you want to prefer people look up social or Seventh Kingdom?
I do have a social media account. Let me see. My Instagram account is actually, and there's a funny story behind this name, but it's actually Godzilla_9. And GODSCILLA_9. And the story behind that is that when I first came back to America, because I lived in Germany for a decent amount of my childhood, when I came back to America, my first memory of being in an American school was riding the bus home one day when a kid turned around and asked me what my name was. And I told him Priscilla, and he looked at me with a strange look on his face. And then he bust out laughing. He said, "That sounds like Godzilla." And then he proceeded to make fun of me and got the whole bus to make fun of me. But when I got older, I looked back on it. I said, you know what? Godzilla was pretty cool. So I'll take that.
Well, very cool. Very cool. So it sounds like great stuff. It sounds like Seventh Kingdom is off to a great start. So I'm going to be really fascinated to be able to follow the story and see how that's got a lot of good content in it. Like, wow, 50 volumes. That's unusual for comics in America. So that sounds like a great, you've built a lot of good story up. So Robbie, all I can tell you is it really sounds exciting. Really looks really interesting from what I've seen. And if people want to, it's looks like, again, it's rpxmediaproduction.com is the website if you want to go and take a look. And then you can click on a thing there that takes you to the sneak a peek so you can take a look at some of the pages. And I think you're going to like it. I think it's really amazing, especially with manga on the rise that it is here. I don't see that slowing down anytime soon. So I think, Robbie, you're doing good stuff, and I'm looking forward to great things from you. I think that this is going to be great fun for people. So I wish you much success.
Thank you so much.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
If you're enjoying this show, I would greatly appreciate your support. For $5 a month, you can ensure I'm able to bring you interviews with comic creators week after week. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/major spoilers. Check out that address, again, patreon.com/major spoilers, for more information. Thanks in advance. And that's it for this week. Be back next time. We'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.